Blog Talk Radio.
On here.
Yo, so I got to keep it short tonight. It's the icon, the legend, Tornado Tony Pennycow.
We have an action-packed show with two guests for the first time in a little while. We got a boxing guest, Randy Caballero, and he's an undefeated fighter with a record of 11-0 in knockouts, and he's fighting that tough, unpredictable TBA. On July 1st, and see what happens there. But it's for a title, so whoever TBA is going to have a chance to fight for a minor title there. And also on the second interview, in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll be speaking with Jessica Aguiar, who's a female MMA fighter, and a very tough lady. She's got a 10-4 record with a couple knockouts of her own. And we'll be talking about all the different things she does and her claims to fame. But before that, we have a ton of news to cover. We got a lot of UFC stuff in the pipeline. The big debate over regulation in New York City, or New York State, I should say, is pretty much going through the ringer there with all the different media outlets. Everybody's wondering what's going to happen. There's some people who say it's 50-50. Some people say it's never happened. But it doesn't seem like the UFC's given up hope. Actually, Lorenzo Fertitta was in the news last couple of days trying to make his presence known in the Empire State and trying to gauge what the vote would be like if there was a full vote in the Assembly. But the main problem seems to be that the Assembly probably won't even get a chance to vote on it because there's a bunch of other issues that could end up being ahead of it, and there's time's running out. I think it's June. I doubt it's going to happen. I think the powers that be there are going to try to make sure it doesn't happen. And I think the actual polling public, the voting public there in New York is against it anyway, which is kind of hard to believe because the Post or whatever newspaper polls recently. I saw an article where there was a poll. It said 95% of the pollsters, people polled, approved of regulation. But who knows what that could be all about. The voting public isn't the reading public. Wouldn't surprise me. Also, GSP versus Nick Diaz has been scheduled for October 29th, UFC 137 in Las Vegas. John Jones has been cleared to fight Rampage Jackson at UFC 135. Pretty interesting. And, of course, we have the upcoming Strikeforce event and the Grand Prix, the Heavyweight Grand Prix. And UFC 1 happened last weekend, where the main event saw Shane Carwin get completely down by Junior Dos Santos. It's a pretty sad state of affairs for Mr. Carwin. And Carwin actually accused recently saying he lied to the doctor when the fight was almost stopped, I think in the third round. I was hanging off, or a piece of his eyebrow was in his line of sight, or his eyes were all bloody. The doctor came in, and of course, you know, it was partly the doctor's fault because he didn't say how many fingers am I holding up when he held his hand out to the side to check Carwin's peripheral vision. Instead, he said, can you see this?
Yeah, what are you going to say, right?
Yeah, if you don't want to look
no.
Up, you're not going to say no. So Carwin lied. He admitted to lying, and he actually said he doesn't remember much of the fight at this point. And he had a couple cuts on both eyes, just got a brutal beating from Dos Santos. And it looks like Dos Santos and Carwin are going to face each other. And that should be a good fight because both are very good on their feet. And should make it very interesting. Another MMA news, we had Josh Koscheck and Stefan Bonner talking about fighting each other, even though they're in two different weight classes. And it turns out that the trash talk actually started over this line of T-shirts that Stefan Bonner is wanting to come out with, or has actually already came out with, but he featured on one. Yep. But I'm surprised because it seems like Stefan Bonner has backed away and stopped selling those T-shirts that featured Josh Koscheck on them because Koscheck complained about his exclusive agreements or whatever. But in my experience with the First Amendment and parody, I always go back to the Flint case of Jerry Falwell and Larry Flint's comic in Penthouse portraying Jerry Falwell as having sex with his mother in an outhouse. And it's in the movie with Woody Harrelson, who plays Larry Flint. There's a whole legal battle.
People Flint or something?
Right, yeah, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And so that's pretty much the standard on parody. You can pretty much say whatever you want as long as nobody believes it. You know, so it's kind of surprising that Josh Koscheck did sue over it and Stefan Bonner backed off and stopped selling the T-shirt. Yeah, to me, that's kind of a bad sign. But who knows what could have led up to that. You know, there could have been some pressure from the bosses. We'll never, probably never know. But the other guys took it in good stride. Brock Lesnar is one of the shirts that is on the site. So he didn't have a problem with it. And he's probably got the most money to bring a beef if he had one. He gets paid the most, that's for sure. But it's another legal situation in the UFC. There's other news that the UFC is planning to make all events, all their main events, go five rounds. So we won't see any more three-round main events if that happens. I don't know when it's scheduled to go into effect, but that's that's been circulating in the news. And we're going to discuss the USC 131 results in a few minutes and also run down the Strikeforce Grand Prix, Heavyweight Grand Prix, in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to play a clip of Mike Tyson's induction speech, or at least whatever he could get to before he started crying last Sunday. And I have it all queued up, so let's listen to that.
Born in Brooklyn, New York, a standout amateur, he was a 1984 National Golden Gloves champion, and he turned pro in 1985. His first 19 ended in knockout victories. He became the youngest heavyweight champion in history in 1986 with a second-round TKO over Trevor Burbick for the WBC title. In the modern category, 2011 Hall of Fame inductee Iron Mike Tyson.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, man. Well, first of all, all praise be to God. I just like to thank, it really, really is so nice. So, Catherine Ortega, that's awesome. You're being here. You know what I mean? I read a lot about you, sir. So your movies and everything. It's been a pleasure. All this started, right? I got to be goofy about this so I won't get emotional up here. So listen, right? All this stuff started like when I met Constantine. Bobby Stewart really messed up in this reform school because, you know, I'm always robbing people as a kid, you know? And,
something.
It's just that Bobby Stewart, what is it about that all my life I watch these guys, you know, I look at them, I look at them different than your guys look at them, like when we see Carmen Basilio and all the time, I say, who was up there? When people say, we went to the Hall of Fame, somebody did brambles there, somebody got inducted in the Hall of Fame. And if they're, you know, watch out for a Carmen Basilio, because, you know, he's going to go your pop and punch you in the ribs. You know what I mean? That silly old man, he's a silly old man. But I don't know him like that. I know the guy that'll fight you to the death, there'll be blood in his body. That's funny because why would I want to be like these guys? I always say. Yeah. I don't know, but I have to take my time with this because there's other guys up here, you know. But when I met Cuz, we talked a little bit about money and about we wanted to be great fighters. Hey guys, I can't finish this stuff. Thank you. Thanks.
So that was probably about half of his speech. It's unfortunate because, you know, he had a little bit of a moment there talking about Carmen Basilio.
Yeah, I had watched it on YouTube after I read, you know, that he had written down, and the only thing that was kind of marred it on the YouTube clip was when the guy was videoing, and there were some people there that they were just a little too chatty. So I couldn't really hear Mike the whole time. You hear people like, ah! Mike can't go! Shut the hell up.
Yeah, he's a very articulate guy when he can get the words out. documentary, but I can't imagine how many retakes they had to do because he was crying a lot in that one, too.
Right.
It seems like he's just getting off the ground with his remarks there when he had to give it up. But what can you do? There was a lot of other guys in line, like you said, and it was already a couple awkward moments. He probably just got nervous and said, that's enough. But he got out enough, I think, to give tribute to some of the guys that he's in the class, same class with now, as well as the guy that brought him, helped bring him there, which is Custom Auto. So, congratulations to Mr. Tyson. And, of course, the other guy to get in, the other guys to get in, deserves some definite recognition. He went in with a couple other decent boxers, very decent boxers, Julio Chavez, of course. And there was a lot of talk actually in the news that Mike Tyson didn't really get in as much for his skill as his reputation, because there was a lot of other skilled boxers in his day. But Mike Tyson was just feared and just happened to rise to the top in an era that didn't really have many huge world leaders.
Rich, when Mike Tyson was in his prime, you and I were both probably around 10, 11, 12 years old. Okay? You know, you're about a year younger than I am. I remember back in, like, cause for a while I was a big boxer fan back in the day, and then I kind of got out of it, you know, in the early 80s. The only guys I'd really ever talk early 80s was, like, Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler. But other than that, I didn't watch boxing. You know, I didn't watch the game fights with my dad on TBS and NBC anymore. And then right around the mid-80s, with the onset of two fighters, Mike Tyson and Vinny Pazienza, I started getting back into boxing. You know, Vinny, I would kind of watch with my dad just because, you know, he'd wear, like, the sequined outfits and everything, and he was an Italian guy, and he was kind of flashy, and he'd do the bolo punches, and he was kind of fun to watch. Mike Tyson, on the other hand, wasn't like that. There was no flash to him. It was black trunks, black shoes, no socks, no robe, just sheer intimidation. And I remember going, like, watch some of his fights. I remember, like, I didn't want my dad to know that I was starting to really get back into it again because I didn't watch it for a couple of years. And I would actually sneak the tapes out that my dad had videoed. And I'm like, I was watching them and no one's around just to watch Mike Tyson destroy somebody. And I was like, man, it's like almost like I'm sneaking my dad's porno tapes, except I'm sneaking my dad's boxing tapes. But I was like, I just remember going to a party, and it was Mike Tyson was fighting Holmes, and everybody was talking about it. Like, oh man, Tyson's fighting Holmes tonight. Holmes is 38 years old. He hasn't fought in a while. What do you think he's going to be able to do? And other people were like, yeah, but you know, I don't know about this Tyson kid. And then they're talking, and I'm sitting there, and I'm I was 88. I think I was like 11 and a half years old. And I'm sitting there with the adults, and I'm like, oh, no, man, not Mike Tyson. You know, he's knocking everybody out. My dad looked at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, Dad, we're going to come watch the fight, right? He's like, okay. I was going to go home and watch the fight, but if you want to watch it with me, be my guest. That was Mike Tyson's appeal. I was talking to my friend George the other day, and we were just talking about Tyson, kind of honoring him, getting inducted. And the one thing I'll never forget, in 1988, Tyson knocks out Larry Holmes. Very significant knockout because they referenced it in The Hangover. And he's going to fight Michael Spinks 6 months later. Mike Tyson takes a tune-up title defense. You know, he took a tune-up title defense. Yeah, I'm going to get ready. Let me just fight this guy, just get him out of the way, just keep myself sharp. And he obliterated Tony Tubbs. He left him in a pool of blood over in Tokyo. That's what Mike Tyson's appeal was. He made people talk. Right now in the heavyweight division, you got a big fight coming up in, what, 2.5 weeks, I think it is. Less than that, between Vladimir Klitschko and David Haye. Nobody's talking about that. I don't see people talking about the water cooler saying, boy, man, that Klitschko and that Haye, man, they're going to get at it. That should be a good fight.
Nobody's writing rap songs about those guys either.
Mike Tyson could be fighting, you know, he could be fighting an 87-year-old grandmother. People would be talking about it by the water cooler.
Right.
That was my question.
Actually,
that's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Even with some of the heavyweights in mixed martial arts getting better at their striking. Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos this past weekend, they don't quite have the kind of hype that he had behind him. And certainly, they don't have the bank account that he used to have. He still does live in a mansion out here in Vegas, but I imagine that's from doing a lot of public events and staying busy outside the ring. And not really from his savings. He did have bankruptcy not too long ago, a few years back, I think, and troubles with keeping his lifestyle going. But for everybody out there listening, I also wanted to make a quick announcement about we're going to try to be a little bit more interactive on the show here. So if you didn't read the preview on the blog, if you go to the blog at unlimitedfightnews.com/WordPress, there's a little bar at the bottom. Tells you how many people are online, and there's a chat option. If you click on chat, you can talk to us, or at least me, I'm on there, and let me know what you want us to talk about or ask our guests about when they come on. So check that out, and use it. Use that feature if you're out there listening. We'd like to hear some feedback from our listeners. Now, at this point, I just want to run through the UFC 131 results, briefly talk about the fights that I did see. Then we're going to jump right to the Strikeforce lineup for this weekend. And then we'll get to all the boxing stories before we get our boxer on and talk to Randy Caballero. For one, we did speak about Junior Dos Santos versus Shane Carwin. That was a unanimous decision, although Junior had a few points in the fight where he probably could have knocked out Carwin. And Herb Dean actually drew a lot of praise from Dana White for not stopping the fight in the first round, even though it seemed through the whole fight that he never really had a chance to win. And, you know, it was just pretty much the story at the end about Carwin was all about his heart. You know, his face didn't fare that well at the end of the fight. Kenny Florian made a very good impression. First fight at featherweight in the UFC against Diego Nunes, who was a really well-rounded fighter, had a few different tricks up his sleeve, but none of them worked against Florian. Florian cut him open pretty bad with some elbows to the top of the head, which ironically he had done to him in his fight not too long ago with the other hometown kid, Joe Lozon. So he represented Boston well. He pissed off a lot of the Vancouver fans, though, because he wore a Bruins jersey to the cage. And as we know from the riots after the Stanley Cup win by the Bruins last night, the Vancouver people don't have very good sportsmanship. At least not the hockey fans. Mark Munoz had a unanimous decision win over Demian Maia. We had Dave Herman, a guy we talked about last week, is a little strange, a little weird kind of guy. He actually must think before the fight that Brazilian jiu-jitsu doesn't work, he was quoted as saying. So he kind of pissed a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners off before the fight by saying that, but he spoiled the debut of a guy named John Olav Einemo, who wasn't nearly as cut in good a physical shape as Herman, and ended up winning fight of the night because it was really back and forth for a little while, and then Herman just got the better of him with some striking, primarily knees. He landed a lot of good knees, so it was a pretty interesting fight. We had Donald Cerrone took out Wagner Rocha by unanimous decision. By the way, Herman knocked out Einemo in the second round by TKO. Cerrone beat Rocha in a pretty decent fight. I didn't really see much of a battle going on there. It was pretty much all Cerrone in that fight. Sam Stout took on Eve Edwards and just the well, the only really major knockout of the night other than Herman's and one of the preliminary fights. Sam Stout just laid Edwards out cold, and for a little while there, it was one of those situations where you wondered if Edwards was even going to get up or if they were going to have to bring the stretcher in. He was going to end up in a coma. He was just eyes rolled in the back of his head. It was a one-punch left-hook knockout, if I remember correctly. And Edwards just did not look good. Land just the way he went out on his feet. Then his head hit the mat, bounced off the mat, and his legs were shaking. And he was just like chalk, you know, the murder scene chalk line around you. They could have done that right there. And it was like both arms out to the side, legs spread open, like a murder scene. It was bad. So Sam Stout definitely made a good impression. It was the only first round knockout of the night, although there were a couple other knockouts. Then we had Chris Weidman got submission of the night. It was only two submissions, and that was the only one on the main card. He submitted Jesse Bonfelt in the first round. 6 seconds left to go in the round. We had the preliminaries. Christoph Sosnitsky beat Mike Massenzio by decision. Nick Ring beat James Head by rear naked choke. Dustin Poirier beat Jason Young by unanimous decision. Joey Beltran took out Aaron Rosa by TKO. That was a decent fight. Both of those guys were slugging for the fences. It was kind of funny. It was in the preliminaries on Spike TV. And Rosa's a fat guy. Beltran's got a little extra weight on him, but he's got a little better physique. But they were swinging like crazy and punching toe-to-toe like there's no tomorrow. And both of them will definitely be back, I think, just for the crowd-pleasing ability they both showed there. And then a fight that got Dana White talking again was Darren Elkins versus Michihiro Omagawa. And Elkins won by unanimous decision. But Dana White actually said he vetoed the judge's decision and he's going to pay Omagawa a win bonus. And he just criticized the crap out of the judges and said that their 30-27 score for Elkins was ridiculous. And this is a fight that they actually had monitors inside of the cage, which they just started doing for certain fights. And Dana White said it just really pissed him off that it was scored that way, and doesn't understand, you know, what these judges are looking at in some of these situations. So he wasn't very happy. And that does it for that card. Let's just run down the Strike Force card here quickly. We have the heavyweights in the tournament still. We have Alistair Overeem fighting Fabricio Werdum. It's actually a rematch that Werdum won the first time. Got Josh Barnett fighting Brett Rogers. Another interesting matchup. Barnett's had some steroid issues in the past, and Rogers has just surprised a lot of people, kind of came out of nowhere. KJ Nunes fighting Jorge Masvidal. Daniel Cormier versus Jeff Monson. Which should be a pretty decent fight. Both guys have a great wrestling background. Valentin Overeem, Alistair's brother, is going to be fighting Chad Griggs. Theseus Jay-Z Cavalcante versus Justin Wilcox. Connor Hume versus Magno Almeida. Nashon Burrell versus Joe Ray. Todd Moore versus Mike Bronzulis. And Brian Melancon versus Isaac Valley Flag. That rounds that out. We also have some boxing news. One last MMA story, though. It's not really MMA as much as just MMA business. Tap Out has signed Chad Ochocinco to their mouth guards, even though he probably is better off promoting a muzzle. He's going to be promoting mouth guards. And Tap Out's really starting to expand into some documentary movie work and also sponsoring Kevin Harvick's team on NASCAR. They've got a co-sponsoring promotion deal going on there. Getting back to hockey and boxing crossover there, we had an interesting story this week talking about how there's an Alston boxing club who's been following and rooting hard for Bruins forward Sean Thornton. He's a member of an Alston boxing club. And, of course, the way hockey is nowadays, you don't see as many fights, especially longer ones.
So,
yeah. And it's, I wonder if the referees get hazard pay now, because they really jump right in the thick of things. And, you know, they don't have much for protection. Most of them just wear the half helmet deal. And they don't have the face masks like the hockey players do, even though they usually kind of toss them off when they do get in tussles. So that's pretty interesting. And he says, Sean Thornton says he doesn't do it for the fight aspect of it. He does it for the conditioning, which is interesting. Because he does play very physically. And most hockey fights, he says, nowadays last a minute or less. So it's not
if
like
that.
Actual sparring or boxing where it's, you know, 3-minute rounds. Yeah, if that. He's definitely an interesting character, and he got to hoist Stanley's Cup last night. So I thought that was a story worth mentioning. They also had some Rocky Marciano news this week, good and bad. His daughter Mary Ann passed away of lung disease, which is probably a result of watching her mom smoke for so many years. Her mother, I think, died of the same.
Her mother was a very, very heavy smoker. That was one of the things that Rocky really had gotten disgusted with her about. You know, Rocky's wife, Barbara, was that her name? She was a heavy smoker, a heavy drinker. She had put on, you know, a lot of weight. And that's why, you know, Rocky, for the longest time, would, you know, he was out, you know, gallivanting around, you know. He really, for a long time, had a strained relationship with his wife. And unfortunately, but, you know, that smoking ain't no joke, man. It ain't no joke, Rich.
Nope. That's why it's starting to disappear from more and more public places. Actually, I am out in Las Vegas. They're just now campaigning to get rid of indoor smoking. And,
you know, I wouldn't disagree with it. And, you know what sucks for a guy like me is, out of my friends, if, you know, maybe like 10 or 12 of the guys that I work selling Christmas trees with, these guys are all friends of mine, I'll say 9 of the 12 smoke, and smoke heavily. So when we're in, it's, you know, 10 degrees out, you're cold, you're hanging in the trailer, what's everybody doing? They're in the trailer smoking. It's like, well, great, I either stay inside and die from lung cancer or go outside and freeze my ass off.
And the good news for Rocky is they had a big-time powwow up in Brockton where they discussed the big statue that's been in the works. The WBC has been back and forth on whether it's going to happen or not, and they finally pressured Jose Suleiman to come up there and meet with a lot of the locals, and they promised now to have it put in place by the month of September next year.
Right.
We'll hopefully see that happen, and maybe I'll be back east by then to actually witness the ceremony, because I know that had a big hand in also working on the plaque project for Rocky's trainer, Ali Colombo, and they're trying to set it up so that the plaque is in a central area right near that statue. I think it's going to be like a 22-foot statue, so it's serious business. And actually, I just saw an article that mentioned that they're modeling it now off the knockout punch of Jersey Joe Walcott, when the previous models that I saw was just Rocky standing there, I think raising his fist or something. So that'll be interesting.
That's cool.
And
training sessions last night. You know, the kid that's trained, it's his third week with me, and he brought another kid over the other day. It was his first training session. And I was talking to them about, you know, handling how to turn their body into the punches and using their hips and, you know, how to generate power. And I took them to the one, picture hanging up in my wall, which is a artist-drawn photo of the knockout punch. And I said, that punch right there traveled no more than 6 inches before it knocked the guy out cold for 5 minutes.
That's rocking right hand. She was pretty much four. Also, speaking of fighters from Brockton, we had Marvelous Marvin Hagler sticking up for Manny Pacquiao up at the Boxing Hall of Fame in Canastota. Somebody from ESPN tracked him down, and they got him to talk about the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao issue, and he compared the back and forth on the negotiations that fell apart the first time that they were supposed to fight to his own situation with Sugar Ray Leonard, which, as I've said multiple times on this show, was the first fight I ever bet on as a kid and lost because Hagler was the hometown guy and Leonard was kind of a sleeper in that fight. Just came out of nowhere.
Well, you figure he hadn't fought in 3 years. Nobody thought he had a chance.
Right.
It was kind of like Ali versus Foreman.
Right. But apparently there were some stipulations in that fight that gave Hagler a situation where he could sympathize with Pacquiao. And it involved ring size and the gloves. The size of the gloves. Let me just pull up the article and I'll get to the rest of that story. Sugar Ray Leonard dictated the size of the ring. He wanted it a 24 by 24 foot ring instead of 18 by 18, and he wanted 12 ounce gloves instead of 10. And on top of that, he actually asked for a 12-round fight instead of 15. So at that time, they actually did still have the 15-rounders. And his reasoning was the ring gave him, bigger ring gave him more room to move. The heavier gloves would soften Hagler's power punches, and the shorter fight would make it easier to get out of the fight without having stamina problems. And Marvin took on the voice of Pacquiao to talk about Mayweather's weird rules about the blood doping and those tests and all that stuff. And he said, "Who are you? Who are you? I mean, come on. If you want to fight, let's fight. Let's stop all this nonsense and let's give the people out there that they what they want to see. And they want to see a good fight and hopefully none of the fighters get hurt." And he was visibly frustrated that the fight hasn't happened yet. And he says that the real reason it needs to happen is for the fans and for the sport itself, saying that the public is demanding this fight, and I think it's great for boxing. And then the ESPN guy that caught him said, "Sounds like you think Manny will win." And Marvin said, "I believe so." So there you go. He's a Manny fan. And also, speaking of Mayweather, he was actually in the news for a good reason this week. Can you believe that?
Is that because he's going to fight?
No. He actually paid for the funeral of Genaro Hernandez. He did it quietly, and he was actually the last guy to fight Hernandez in the ring professionally. That was Hernandez's last fight. And it sort of launched his career. Because people before that fight, Buddy was biting off more than he can chew. And he ended up taking the fight and winning it. So he did a real classy thing by, as soon as he heard the news, he had his assistant get on the phone and contact the family. And he didn't he didn't toot his own horn or put it out there himself. Somebody else found out, and they put a story out on it saying that he's not all bad. He does have a heart somewhere in the obnoxiousness. Although he did also make some bad news this week, coming out and saying that he will only fight all natural fighters, which was sort of a veiled continuation of the defamatory remarks that he's been making and got himself sued for making. So that's pretty interesting. Juan Diaz retiring from boxing. It's another story.
You going to focus on his law career?
Well, actually, he has a lot of things going. I think he has a towing business. They mentioned in the article he has a lot of outside stuff going on. He does have a law degree, but he isn't necessarily committed to going into practice right away. So he's exploring all options at this point, but definitely leaving boxing. Sounds like for good, although we can never rule out guys like that coming back at a later point.
Never rule it out. But on the other side, I mean, that's good. I mean, he's fought the good fights. You know, obviously he's taken a lot of punishment in his last few fights, and, you know, it's time to move on.
Right. And speaking of time to move on, we have to get our guy on the phone.
Yeah, it was a good segue, wasn't it?
We're overdue for Randy Caballero. We'll have to ask him if he knows who his TBA is going to be on July 1st. But he also actually is poised to talk about the Mayweather versus Victor Ortiz fight as well. So that was mentioned in his little biography. We'll have to keep him on. Calling him late.
Hello.
Hello, Randy.
Yeah, this is Randy.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
How are you doing?
Good. We're also on the line with our co-host here, Tony the Tornado Pennacal.
What's up?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man.
That's good to hear.
All right. Well, we're a little late on giving you a call here tonight, so... We're just going to get right into it. We know you got a fight coming up on July 1st. Have you found out yet who you're going to be fighting?
Well, it's been like this since the beginning of my pro career. You know, they throw a name out there and then they give me another name. But right now they have a guy from Arizona, Alexis Santiago. He's 8-0. He's undefeated. So you know what? It's going to be a good fight. I fought him in amateurs. So, you know, I beat him in amateurs. I'm ready. Whoever they put in front of me, you know, I said I'm all ready for everybody. I train hard inside this gym.
It doesn't bother you too much when they come to switch the squad.
What was that? I couldn't hear you.
I said that doesn't bother you when they pull the switcheroo on you, just throw them in there and take care of business?
No, not at all. You know what? We're in this gym. My dad taught me, since I was a little kid, my dad taught me every different style that's out there. And, you know, it's worked now. Everywhere I've traveled, you know, fighting all these national tournaments, you get all those different styles. And, you know, it helped a lot. So, you know what, I'm not worried about anything, you know. I know later, it's a start. That's where everybody starts, you know. Everybody in the valley that I talked to, the Diaz brothers, they all said, you know what, that's the way your career starts off. You know, they'll throw a guy in there and change him in the last minute. But it's fine with me, you know. I know it's all going to change. And later on in my career, I'm going to know, you know, months ahead of time, who I'm going to fight, so it's all right. You know what? I'm ready for anybody.
All right.
And what would you say was your toughest fight so far?
You know what? So far, you know, as my career goes on, you know what? These guys are getting tougher and tougher. You know, I'm able to take them out in the earlier rounds, but, you know, they are tougher. You know, from my beginning of the career, you know, they were heavier than I was. We were getting heavier guys. But now I know, you know, the guys are getting tougher. They know how to box more, throw more punches, you know, head movement, stuff like that. You know, it's getting a lot better. So, you know, I'm learning as it goes on, and the guys get tougher and tougher.
Cool. And what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport of boxing?
In the sport of boxing, you know what? It's to have many titles under my belt. You know what? That's every boxer's dream to have titles. And that's what I'm looking for. You know what? I want to start off at 118 and just work my way from there. You know, I know with having Cameron Dunker as my manager, Golden Boy Promotion, you know, being with them, I know they're going to take care of me. The team I have on my side, my dad, and I know they're going to take care of me. So, you know what? Whatever they have planned for me, whenever it's time to step up and go for the titles, I'm ready for it.
All right. And do you have any role models out there, either inside the ring or outside?
Well, what was that?
Do you have any role models out there who are either fighters or people who are friends and family or trainers and that sort of thing?
You know what? My biggest role model is my dad. You know, he's brought me in the sport. He's taught me how to box since day one. And you know what? That my dad's always had a dream. And when he was in Nicaragua, you know, living out there, he's always wanted to have titles but never got that chance to live his dream. And you know what? I'm living that dream he wanted to live, and that's what I'm trying to do, you know, show him that, you know, that I'm doing it not only for myself but for him and, you know, my family on my side that supports, you know, everybody in this valley.
Cool. And how about your favorite fighter out there? Is there anybody that you try to watch a lot and try to imitate or pick up things from?
You know what? There's a lot of great fighters out there. All those fighters that are on top, like Manny Pacquiao, you know, Floyd Mayweather, Victor Ortiz, you know, all those guys. You know what? I don't have a favorite fighter. I just take little by little from each fighter and I learn new things from each one and bring it to the gym and bring it to my style.
All right, cool.
Obviously, I've been following the sport a long time. I mean, I've been involved in the sport, you know, at a young age. Were there fighters that either no longer fighting or even no longer with us that you always looked up to and admired?
I can't hear. The phone keeps, like, breaking up.
Rick, could you hear me on that one?
Yeah, let me just hold the mic closer to the speaker. Try again.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Hello?
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 Can you hear him?
Yeah, I can hear you guys now.
Okay, well, I'll ask the question. If Randy can't hear me, maybe you can answer it for me. I was asking if there were any fighters, since you've been growing up in the sport, that either, you know, past fighters, either that have retired or even ones that have passed away, that he admired growing up.
Oh, you know what, growing up, you know, I looked up. Antonio Diaz, Joao Diaz, Julio Diaz, you know, they were great fighters in this gym. And, you know, they were, you know, the biggest people in this valley at the time. And you know what? Now it's my end in this valley and show people, you know, what we have in this valley. We have a lot of great little kids coming up in this valley, and I'm trying to set a good example for them as Antonio and Julio all did for me.
Awesome. All right. And what would you say is your favorite punch, if you have one?
Favorite punch, you know what, I can't call my favorite punch yet, but you know, ever since I was a little kid, I loved to throw that left hook to the top and then left hook to the body. It always worked, but, you know, as I'm going on, yeah, as each fight goes on, you know, I'm my hands are getting stronger and stronger, and I'm feeling, you know, different power in each hand, and there are different knockouts in each hand, so, you know, I can't call my best punch yet. I know it's going to come sooner or later when I'm able to say, you know what, that's my best punch.
Yeah, the left hook was always my favorite power punch, but when I boxed in the amateurs, I preferred the jab more than any other punch. And just for some reason, always resorted to throwing that jab out there. I was more defensive than offensive most times. Never got a knockout, so that's probably why. I like the jab too much. I was a clinch
jumper. Yeah, jab is the main punch in the sport, though, to keep a boxer away.
Yeah. I always found, too, that, you know, when anybody who didn't box tried to look cool and say, I'll fight you, you could always keep them off you with a jab and intimidate them. On that.
That's right.
But as far as training, what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
Stay focused. You know what? I'm not the kind of guy that goes out there and parties and stuff like that. I stay focused. You know, my career is barely started, so I'm fighting month after month. You know, there's no time to mess around or anything like that. So, you know, I have to stay focused, keep my head on straight, and, you know, stay 100% inside this gym.
You're a young guy yourself, obviously only 20 years old, but I want to ask you, what advice do you have right now for young fighters getting into the sport? I just started training 2 17-year-olds just a couple days ago. Any advice you would want to give to them?
You know what? That's what I'm trying to do in the sport. Like, is set a good example for these kids in the sport that wanna become someone. You know, if it's not the sport, just stick to something. But you know what? If you have it in the sport, stick to it and never give up. You know, that's something I always had. You know, growing up, there's so many kids that walk to this gym, and you know, from back like when I was younger, I'm the last one standing in this gym. You know, we have a lot of new kids, and you know, this is a tough sport. You have to stick to it. You know, never give up. You know, I've tried every other sport, but I always come back to this one. It's the love I have for the sport, that's why. And, you know, I never gave up, and I kept moving forward, and that's why I'm at where I'm at right now.
All right. And what would you say is the thing that you enjoy most about boxing?
You know, there's so much, you know, I can say about what I love about boxing, traveling and everything. But you know what? I noticed that the love I have for being a sport is beating that ring. Beating that ring and putting on a good show for everybody and building my career as it goes on and my fan base gets bigger and you know, people recognize me more and more. But you know, being in that ring is one of the greatest feelings I love to feel.
All right.
I was asking this question the other night, to these two young guys that I'm training now. They just started with me, so they're a little learning everything about boxing. And one thing I was actually kind of joking with them about is a question that I ask to a lot of fighters, you know, being a fighter myself, you know, back in the day. And I would always say that I was probably the most goofball, jovial guy, you know, at the weigh-in. You know, we were walking into a gym, we were in the arena one time, and some guys from, like, the other amateur team were, like, kind of just laying down. I said, oh, you guys are practicing for tonight, I see. You know, just having a lot of fun like that. But I became real serious and focused when my hands got wrapped. You know, some guys will say it's when they're walking to the ring. Other guys will say it's after the weigh-in that they start getting the game face on. For you personally, when you're getting ready for a fight and it's fight night, when does that game face come on for you?
My game face doesn't get on until I'm in that locker room, putting on my wraps and everything, putting on those gloves, and my dad moving me around, warming me up. That's how my game face gets on. Other than that, you know what, inside this gym, you know, I do my training, but I love to joke around with the kids here. You know, when you're here at this gym, it's a fun, you try to make it as something fun to do, as you know, not as a hobby, not as something, you know, major that you really want to do as you're growing up. And I try to joke around with the kids and, you know, let them have fun in this gym. But as for me, when I step inside that locker room and I start putting on my hand wraps and everything like that, that's when I put my game face on, and there's no getting me out of the zone.
Cool. Now, as far as the big fighters out there nowadays, Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, and the whole debate about when they're going to fight and who would win. What do you think about both those guys? And we actually got a message about Victor Ortiz is going to be appearing at your fight, right?
Yeah, I heard about that. You know, the first time I ever met Victor, I was still an amateur. He came out here to our gym to train, and I was sparring right when I walked out. I'll never forget. I walked out that ring, and he looked at me and stopped me. He goes, "Hey, what's your name, man?" I go, "Randy Caballero." He goes, "You know what? You're gonna make it somewhere in this sport." He goes, "You have talent." He goes, "Never give up." And you know what? Stuff like that. When you hear from people like that, you know, he wasn't where he's at right now. You know, he was barely starting his career as well. But you know what? just hearing stuff like that from people, you know, it motivates me and wants me to keep moving forward. And, you know, I respect Victor Ortiz. You know, I wish him the best of everything. You know, his upcoming fight, I hope he takes him out. You know, that's something, you know, that's every person's dream, to take out, you know, their favorite fighter growing up. You know, he looked up to Mayweather, and now look, he's in the ring with him and ready to take him out. And I think he can do it. You know, he has everything to take him out, and I hope he does real good.
You think Lloyd's going to have a lot of rust, and that's going to have an impact?
You know, like I said, Floyd Mayweather is my favorite fighter as well. But, you know, sometimes there's some fighters that take off a long time and they come back and they're not the same fighter anymore. But, you know, as Floyd, he's not the kind of person that goes down there and bangs with you. He's more of an outboxer, tries to, you know, confuse the fighter and picks his punches smart. And that's what he does. But you know what? Hopefully, Victor comes out with that win. That's what I'm hoping for Victor. You know, whether Mayweather comes with his A game or not, you know, I'm hoping Victor comes out with that win.
We'll look at that fight. You know, obviously Victor really won a lot of fans back with his very impressive fight with Andre Berto just a month ago. And he showed you right there. Victor's a guy, he can get hit, he can get hurt. You know, he does have tender skin that he's going to swell, he's going to cut. But he actually really impressed people, myself being one of them, with that fight with Berto. Now, part of it, it's like you got to look at it in two different ways. I was actually saying this to Rich about a week ago. A lot of it depends on, you know, which Floyd Mayweather you see. Remember, this guy hasn't been in the ring in over a year. It's going to be about 16 months come fight time. And in that fight with Mosley, who proved to be that he doesn't have much left in the tank, Mosley was able to clinch and Mayweather. Now, the question is, what are we going to see? Are we going to see the old Floyd Mayweather, or are we going to see an old Floyd Mayweather? Because if Floyd loses that one half a step, just like what happened to Roy Jones back 7 years ago, Jones was untouchable until he lost that one half a step. And now, I mean, he's spending more time on the canvas than Rembrandt.
That's exactly true. You know what? You know, that's a good question. I don't know how to answer that question. You know, it depends on how his training goes and how he gets back in this gym and he thinks hard to fight. But, you know, I know they're both going to come to fight. And, you know, I'm thinking you're probably going to see the old Floyd Mayweather trying to do his thing, you know, at outboxing the fighter and everything like that. Not the kind of fighter that goes in there and tries to bang with you. But you never know. This sport is unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen inside that ring. Anything can happen.
Now, as far as the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, do you think that's ever going to happen? And if it does, who wins?
If it ever happens, I hope it does. I'm not sure. I'm like everybody else. I don't know about that fight. But, you know, if it does, I'm hoping you see the old Floyd Mayweather. And to be honest with you, Pacquiao's a great fighter. I don't take nothing from him. You know, he's a beast inside that ring. And, you know, but I'm going to have to go with Floyd. If he's the old Floyd that, you know, everybody loves to see, I don't think Pacquiao would ever be able to touch him.
Yeah, actually, you know, we had Teddy Atlas on the show. On a podcast, not on this show, but he made some interesting observations about how Pacquiao seems to be really handpicking a lot of his opponents lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's actually faced anybody who has the defensive ability of Mayweather when he's at his best. So I think that's what's going to make it interesting. But I just... I have to concede to the output level of a Pacquiao when he's prepared and ready to go and at his best. And I think that's what puts me over the edge towards Pacquiao. But I think why people are asking for this fight in every corner of the sport is because it's going to be a good fight. I mean, there's almost no way you can picture it being a bad fight unless somebody gets injured early or something, you know, weird happens. To make it lopsided, but you know, it's interesting to actually have a debate about it, because I think people are leaning towards Pacquiao these days than towards Floyd, but I always appreciate somebody that's going to stick up for Mayweather on that side. You make a good point there. As far as people out there in your weight division and in your skill level right now, is there anybody that you really want to fight right now or pretty shortly after you get through this fight?
You know what? I don't care who I fight. I always said whoever they put in front of me, I'm ready for them. You know, I'm training hard inside this gym. You know, I know when it's time for a title fight, you never know. There can be someone at the top of that list at the time, and when it's my turn to get up there and fight for that title, maybe that same person is not going to be there. So you know what? I just go with whoever's there. I'm ready to take them out, and that's in my mind, and I'm going to keep it like that, and I'm not going to, you know, call anybody out. Whoever's there on top at the time, I'm ready to take them out. That's all I got to say.
That's a good attitude to have. Now, as far as, you know, the whole sport in general, what got you into boxing in the first place?
You know, growing up, my dad being a boxer and him not being able to pursue his dream in the sport, him having my older brother, he trained my older brother, me growing up. As I was growing up, me and my older brother would go in my dad's room, get his gloves, his headgear, his boxing shoes, and we would run to the living room and me and him would fight, you know, just nonstop, just go at it. And me being the younger brother, he would beat me up. And he toughened me up when I was a little kid, and that's why I think, you know, I fell in love with the sport. My brother, I love watching my brother fight. My brother would, in the amateurs, he would knock people out with one hit. And, you know, later on in his career, he kind of drifted away from the sport. But, you know, my brother and my dad, who brought me into the sport, and I thank him for that. And I'm glad to have him on my sidelines too here.
That's funny you say that, because it was actually my sister who got me to want to train to box, because they used to call her Manly Jane. Her name was Mary Jane, of course. So she was a tomboy, and she used to go for the hair all the time. She was a pretty good fighter. You know, she was always ready to throw down with anybody. I never saw her lose to a girl, but she was a few years older than me, and my grandmother used to always tell me growing up, one of these days, you're going to get big, and you're going to be able to take her. So,
did that day ever come?
Oh, yeah, it came. But you know what? It was such a bad beating. I felt bad, you know? This is what I waited for, you know? I feel like crap for hurting her so bad, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't feel good when you find out it's your own relative.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, there was always that switch in me when I got into a fight where once I got past the point of no return, it got to the point a lot of times where after the fact I would look back at it and it would scare me, you know, that you would be able to do that to somebody. So it kind of taught me to respect my ability a little more and get out of fighting in the streets and get more into fighting for sport. Because it just serves no purpose to abuse that ability when you get into it. And, you know,
yeah, definitely.
One of the things why, one of the reasons why I'm glad that there was actually an outlet to participate in the sport when I was in college, when I got that opportunity, and even before that, just hanging out at the gym training, and you know, even just hitting the bag in the basement. And Tony always comes out with the story about how the bag will never hit you back, right?
My favorite stories, Randy, and I tell this. I had two 17-year-old kids that just walked in, you know, having me train them, just started with me. And I told them the same story. I said, I was a kid. I grew up right outside of Philadelphia. And my thing was, I didn't excel at really anything. I played football. I was mediocre. You know, I played a little bit of varsity, not much. So I see all these other guys, and, you know, the girls are wearing their Letterman's jackets, or they're wearing their jerseys at the game, and no girl wanted to wear my jersey at the game. You know, I was in school. I wasn't in any really club. I didn't have anything else really to keep myself in. Hang out, you know, with some friends. And, you know, I wasn't a drinker. But I wanted people to notice me. You know, I didn't do exceptional or say, look at him. You know, we want to hang out with him. He was going to be, he's the cool guy. I was popular, never the cool guy. And I wanted people to, you know, let me and look up to me too. So I was getting in trouble on the street because I felt if I could fight and people were afraid of me, and I hate, then people would respect me, would know us. I wanted people to know who I was. And I got in a fight, and I mean, I'm lucky that I'm still here today and I'm still doing well, and, you know, I don't have a rap because of it. And nothing worse happened. I got older, and I realized how stupid when I started boxing. When I started boxing, you know what? He's paying attention to me. And people, if they wanted to see what I was, they wanted to see how bad I was, they could pick it in a fight. So I tell them, you know, if you come in my gym, I said, I want to tell you something. I said, I want you to go out there and show the people how much of a badass you are. You might come to this gym, and you might be angry. And you might want to prove something. And you might want to blow out your frustration. I said, here's a heavy bag. It's 130 pounds of water encased in leather. And I said, no matter what you do to that bag, you can hit it, you can beat it till you're exhausted. It doesn't run with the gang. It doesn't call the cops. It doesn't carry a gun. It will be there the next day. It will take everything you got. And when you're not, when you're tired, you're not angry anymore. And you know what? You've accomplished something. You've proven something. You've turned around and you've gotten something done, and you feel better about yourself. That's what I stress to anybody I train, whether you're a young guy or an adult, male or female.
Yeah, that's honestly true. You know what? Take all your anger out, man. You know, growing up, that's something, you know, living in a house full of boys, it was my mom being the only girl. I have, you know, three other brothers, one older, two younger, and then, you know, growing up, we'd always just fight, and it was just nerve-wracking. Like, we'd always fight, and everybody would be all mad. So we'd come to the gym and take it out of the bag, or you know, we'd get inside the ring and spar. And, you know, that's something we left to hear in the gym. You know, if we had any angers, we left to hear at the gym and went home. We were all fine. You know, we were probably just all tired, and we just didn't want to deal with anybody. We went straight to bed, but, you know, in the
exactly.
gym, we left it all in here, and went home, went to bed, and we were just relaxed.
Yeah, the one thing about boxing is, you know, usually after a fight, the fighters at least shake hands or hug, you know. That doesn't happen on the streets.
Oh, no, not at all.
There's not as much respect after a fight, you know, whether it's in the schoolyard or in somebody's backyard.
And Randy, come to think about it, I mean, there were times when I had fights on the street. And afterwards, I'm sitting there thinking, I could have got shot.
What is it
you broke up right now?
Well, I was just thinking, there were times on the street, you know, growing up, that, you know, after it was over, I could have got shot. Didn't think nothing out of it. These people could have came back, you know, shot my family. I had a problem with the guy, I'd say, okay, yeah, me and you got a problem? Okay, we can settle it Saturday night, but it's going to be one-on-one. You bring no weapons, I bring no weapons. You don't bring your boys, I don't bring my boys. We sit back and me and you go at it mano-a-mano. Nobody wanted to do that, you know, especially with me, because I could throw my hands. You know, I didn't really train to box yet, but I could still throw my hands pretty good. And now I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, I could have whipped so-and-so's ass. And the next thing I know, we had a situation in Philadelphia. I mean, you were very young at the time. I mean, I was a teenager. And a young guy, a group of thugs attacked and beat him over the head with a bat and killed him. Right on the steps of a church. The guys that did that, I had a lot of heat with them. And I was going to fight like the leader of their group on a couple of occasions. But he didn't want to fight me one-on-one. They had a gang mentality where they would try to isolate you and then beat you with a weapon, a bat, a hockey stick, a chain or whatever. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, all the dumb shit I did, and then I used to walk home most nights from school by myself. Dude, I don't know how I didn't get the crap kicked out of me. I'm lucky I'm here.
That's good. Yeah, but it's like that anywhere. You know, me growing up here, you know, there's a lot of gangs and stuff like that, and I kept myself away from them. You know, I was raised right. You know, my dad, you know, taught me to stay away from stuff like that, and, you know, I thank him for that. But, you know, I'm glad there was this gym here growing up, because if not, you know, I don't know where I would be.
Well, now, Randy, getting back to, you know, your career here, what would you say so far is the best moment you've had in the sport?
You know what, best moment right now so far, you know, is going back in amateurs. I was 16 years old. I flew to Istanbul, Turkey, to fight for the Worlds, and I was representing the U.S., and I came back with bronze medal. You know, it felt, you know, I felt, you know, bad not coming back with gold. You know, I know in my mind I trained so hard for that medal just to win gold, but, you know, when I was standing up on those stands, I just felt good being there, because I know there's so many kids in this world that would love to be where I'm at right now, just getting a bronze medal. And it felt good getting that bronze medal. You know, I think it was Cuba first, and Russia was first, Cuba was second, and I came on third. So, you know, it felt real good.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the ability to travel that you experienced because of boxing. Because that's one of the things that, as popular as MMA gets, you know, you really can't beat about boxing, is that it's truly a worldwide sport. Whereas MMA isn't as entrenched in some of these different countries as boxing is. So
yeah.
It's good that you got that experience to see a little bit of the world, even in the amateurs there.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I'm thankful that's where my dad got me. All the hard work we did with my dad in this gym, he's what got me where I'm at right now, and I thank him for that.
All right, well, speaking of thanking people, is there anybody out there you want to give thanks to, other than your dad, or give a shout-out to, or say hello to, where we take off here?
I just want to thank everybody in Coachella Valley that's been supporting me so far. You know, everybody, you know, my manager, Cameron Duncan, Gold employee, everybody that's been supporting me, you know, different countries from, like, the UK and stuff like that. You know, I thank everybody for that. I hope they don't stop following me. And hopefully they can catch my next fight, July 1st. I'm going to be co-main event on Solo Boxeo Telefutura. And I'll be fighting for a WBC youth title. So, you know, hopefully everybody checks that out. And if you want to hear more about me, you can follow me on my website, teamcabello.com. And I got Facebook. So, you know, hopefully you keep following me.
That's teamcabello.com?
Yeah, teamcabello.com.
Okay. Cool. Well, it's been great chatting with you, and we'll be definitely keeping an eye on you and following your career, and hopefully we'll have you on down the line sometime when you're getting ready for a title fight or something on the world stage.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Thank you, and I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, best of luck to you on July 1st.
All right, thank you. Take care.
You too. All
right, bye.
Bye. All right, so that's Randy Caballero, CABALLERO, for those of you trying to find his website, teamcaballero.com. And we're going to go right into our next interview, since we're also probably a little bit late, even though I told Jessica we're probably catch her in the window between 6 and 6:15 Pacific time here. And just got her standing by, probably ready to go. And we're switching gears here from boxing to MMA, but that doesn't mean that you can't
ask her a question.
Yeah, male to female too. But that doesn't exonerate you from asking questions, Tony. So I'm expecting at least 2 or 3 questions from you.
Don't use big words around me.
Hello, you reached Jessica Aguilar. I am currently unavailable. If you would send me your name, number, and brief message, I will return the call as soon as possible. Thank you, and have a great day.
So hold on.
At the tone, please record your message.
I hope she's not thinking the wrong time.
You may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Jessica, it's Rabble Rousing Rich trying to get a hold of you. We're going to try you back in another 5 minutes here. Hopefully we'll get you for the Combat Sports Show here. All right, so we'll keep her in the queue, so to speak, and we'll give you a chance to continue the boxing here, because I forgot to mention a story earlier that I promised we would talk about. put on the blog, and that's a little piece I saw earlier in the week talking about what would happen in the event that Manny Pacquiao and Pernell Whitaker fought. Sounds like an installation of fantasy dream fights for you. So what do you think about that?
That's a very, very good topic there, Rich. Well, let me throw this one on the old computer here. Pernell Whitaker was never really in a fight until he was well past his prime. His fight against Jose Luis Ramirez was an absolute travesty of a joke. His fight with Julio Cesar Chavez was also pretty much a travesty of a joke. What we'd be matching up with, now, the fight with De La Hoya, it goes either way. I mean, I personally thought De La Hoya won that fight, but I was happy that night. It was a night of the 1997 National Championship, and after the fight, at Nationals, we all went to the bar to get ripped and watch the fight. You're going to have two southpaws. You're going to have both with comparable speed, one offensive and one defensive, obviously with Pacquiao being the offensive fighter, Mayweather being the defensive fighter. What you're looking at here is what wins out, offense or defense. If Pacquiao is successful in making Pacquiao is successful in making Whitaker uncomfortable, then he has a very legitimate shot of beating him. If Whitaker, who's a superior boxer, can, obviously outmaneuver, frustrate Pacquiao, similar to what Juan Manuel Marquez did in their first fight, and then there's a chance that the superior boxer would win. I'd really have to really sit down with this one and look at their strengths, their weaknesses. Going by their careers, to be totally honest, I would have to say at the lighter weights, 135 and under, I would have to shade it towards Whitaker. At the heavier weights, especially getting up to 147, because Whitaker at 147 and 154 was good. I don't think he was great. At 140, yeah, 140 is kind of like the swing between them. 140 could go either way. 135 or less, I'd have to go towards Whitaker because he was just faster, and he was on top of his game. At 147 and above, or 144 maybe and above, I got to go towards Pacquiao because that additional weight would just take a little bit of Mayweather's speed and reflexes, and he would need that to win. Where Pacquiao would be the obviously stronger guy and the harder puncher. So hopefully that answers your question satisfactorily.
All right, well, that was pretty good on-the-spot analysis for getting blind. That's why you're the Rain Man of boxing.
Yeah.
Another boxing issue, we got a little time here to discuss, that actually kind of stems from another topic that I'm going to talk about later. Dana White has been, of course, flapping his jaws as usual. About a little bit about boxing, because some of the boxers criticized him recently in a clip that was put out there on YouTube, and talked about the UFC having sort of a monopoly. And Dana White, of course, came right back with his standby response that they're a bunch of idiots. But there was an interesting point that he did make that I got to give him credit for. And he brought up the fact that he thinks that Floyd Mayweather will be treated much differently when he goes to apply for a license, even with all his troubles that he's going through right now, with, allegedly beating his wife and all that. And he compared the situation to Chael Sonnen, who has had some steroid issues and has not had his license approved. He's actually been banned indefinitely because of a situation in California where he tested positive and then apparently lied about it, or allegedly, I should say, lied about it. So what do you think about that? Do you think Floyd's going to have any trouble? And do you think those two situations are apples and oranges? Or what's your take?
Let me think. Damn, we stop putting me on the spot. You know, it's Floyd. So, anytime, you know, you're dealing with him, it's hard to say that. You know what, let me say it's apples and oranges, and you know why? Because Floyd's involved. So something I don't think is ever comparable when he's involved. There's no apples to apples. There's no Floyd to Floyds.
Right. Well, but I think Floyd, say that, because I have the same argument, but for different reasons. And my reason is that we live in a country where you're innocent until proven guilty. And while Floyd is facing a lot more civil problems than criminal, he hasn't yet pled guilty. The case hasn't come to trial, and it really can't be used as a basis to deny him a license because of that fact, whereas Chael Sonnen has pled guilty in the case involving mortgage fraud, or I think it was like a situation where he had a relative's company do work on a house, and there was some financial impropriety going on, and he pleads guilty to a crime and got probation or whatever sentence he got without jail time, and I think he paid a fine, and he basically got caught in the lie with this excuse of hypergonadism, and you know, so it was a compounded issue, whereas Floyd, the most he's facing really right now as far as major issues is this criminal case, which is going to take a long time to hash out, and there's no smoking gun. Well, I don't know if there's a no smoking gun, but there's not enough evidence at this point to force him to enter into any plea agreement. So it seems like it's one person's word against another, and although I do anticipate that he's eventually going to have to plead guilty or face jail time in a trial, it's still hanging out there in the open, and there is no steroid issue that compounds it. So I think that's why it is apples and oranges. But I do give Dana credit for being able to throw that in there at the end of his commentary recently after being confronted by Ariel Helwani about some of the things that the boxing promoters have been saying. And Dana White is a guy that actually came from the boxing side, so it's interesting to hear him fight back against those guys and actually accuse them of copying what he's done.
Which, everybody's
yeah, he didn't really have much evidence to back that up, but he apparently thinks that they've copied everything that he's ever done. Just as much as what you get when you shoot from the hip with him. But the reason why that all came up is because Helwani had asked him about some of the concerns that people have been raising and the rumors that have been going around about an FTC investigation into the parent company of the UFC, Zuffa, and those principals who run it. And, of course, you know, when you get a situation where there's a major entity in the Middle East that's got a 10% ownership of the UFC at this point, you know, the Abu Dhabi government is highly invested. I imagine that kind of ramps up the concerns that the government would have in that kind of a scenario if there was antitrust and monopoly aspects. So I think that has partly a little bit of a motivation, even though I didn't really mention that in my article about the subject that's on the blog. And it's actually at the top of ZionSucks.com right now if you check that out. But there have been a lot of rumors, and it's kind of surprising that they've been mostly on boxing sites, but on the other hand, it's not surprising because it seems like in the MMA media these days, if you say one wrong thing about the UFC, you get blacklisted. So, you know, maybe that's why not too many people have brought it up in those circles. But there is an investigation going on. I confirmed it through my own channels. I know it's happening. I know people are getting interviewed. And it could be big, it could be nothing. But my bet is at the end of the day, they'll have to pay a fine, if anything. They won't have to change much. But it will probably keep them on their toes in the future and make them a little bit more wary of taking advantage of their fighter contracts and doing a lot of this insider dealing that they've done in the past. So that takes care of that. I promised I would mention that and cover that. Now let's give Jessica one more shot to join the call. And if we don't get her on the phone, I guess we'll just have to cover what's coming up for boxing on the weekend.
What is this weekend?
What is this weekend?
Hello?
Hello, Jessica.
Yes.
Hey, it's Rich. How's it going?
Hi, fine. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Great. We also have Tony the Tornado Pennacal on the line with us.
Awesome. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hello. What's going on?
Nothing much. How are you? Just here, you know, getting ready to go to bed. In a little bit. How are you? How are you guys?
We're good.
One thing I definitely want to ask you is there was some mention in your email to us about Mike Brown. You work with him?
Yes.
Well, he actually graduated from the same school that I did.
No way!
On the wrestling team up in Norwich University in Vermont.
Yes.
So I was wondering if he remembered me, because I was only on the team for a brief period, but he might remember me because I fell off a roof while I was up there. That's why I didn't end up keeping up with the team.
Really?
If you ask him about the kid who fell off the roof and he says he remembers it, I think that would be pretty cool if I found that out.
This is Rich, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I'm going to ask Mike about the kid that fell off the roof. That was on the wrestling team with him. If you remember.
Yeah, I know he was. It was around during the same time period, but I'm not sure if he was actually on the team the same year that I was. I was on the team for probably about 3 months my freshman year, and then I went into boxing. So I never ended up going back to wrestling. But
oh wow! Well, I'll ask him. I'll definitely ask him.
Cool. And we'd, of course, love to have him on the show at some point, but this is about you, so.
He'd love to. He would.
What's on the agenda for you coming up? Do you have any big fights? I think you mentioned something about a fight on the 25th, right?
Yeah, that's my next bout. It's going to be Bellator 46 against Carlos Barza, and that's my next. I mean, it's been 7 long months, you know, since I've gotten a fight. But now it's, you know, it's a week away, so I'm excited about that, and I'm ready.
Sweet. And what kind of
It's gonna be here at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida, and that's June 25th.
Nice. And what got you into fighting in the first place?
It was, you know, I kind of fell into it about five and a half years ago. You know, I moved to South Florida and I started training in a small gym. It was a boxing gym, actually. And, you know, one night I got there late and I would usually take the aerobic classes, and I got late for that class. So I took the next class, which I thought was wrestling. And I saw a girl in the class. So I took the class, and it was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class. So after a month of training, you know, I kind of liked it. I kept going to some of the classes. After a month, I competed in ANAGA. My instructor at the time said, you know, I think you should keep competing in ANAGA. So I competed in ANAGA, and I won against these girls that had more experience than I did. So, you know, it was pretty cool. I continued training. I've been an athlete all my life. So that was, you know, it was another taste of competition for me. So I enjoy that, and I continued training, and I went on to my second competition, where it was an American Top Team competition, and that's where I was offered my first fight. They were actually looking for a replacement for Erica Montoya. I replaced Erica Montoya, who was to fight Lisa Ward, and Lisa Ward at that time was also top contender. She had over 6 fights, professional fights. So I had 5 days to fight, train for her, and you know, it became the fight of the night. I trained 5 days. I fought the following Saturday. I lost by a decision, but it became the fight of the night. And, you know, now I've, you know, traveled to different places all around the world, met great people, and here I am today.
Cool.
Going on to my 15th fight.
Well, that's awesome. And it's something that we consider near and dear to our hearts to promote the females in the sport.
Thank you so much.
And it comes from actually a background for me. When I was in high school wrestling, we had one of the first girls to ever compete at the varsity level in high school on our team. And she was just an incredible kid, very dedicated, never gave up, went through every practice. And we were a team that was actually, our motto was men at work. So for her to break in on that level, it was pretty intense. And I never forgot about that. And as I followed women in combat sports, both boxing and MMA, one thing that I've always noticed in some of these fights is that the women seem to go into the cage or the ring as if they're fighting for all of womankind. And I appreciate that, and it comes through. And it seems like you also have a unique perspective of managing yourself. So what's that been like, as well as the fight uphill to get recognized as a female in the sport?
Well, you know, it's like I said, the sport is tough work for the males, and so it's even tougher for the females. But I think, you know, we're getting a lot more exposure and the respect that we deserve. So, you know, it's becoming easier. It's still hard for myself. I manage myself. I do everything myself. So can you hear that echoing? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's... because you're on speaker.
That's really bad.
Oh, speakerphone, so it echoes a little bit sometimes.
It's Richard's fault. We just blame it on him.
I'm sorry?
I said it's Richard's fault. We just blame it on him.
Okay. You know, it's been hard managing myself, but at the same time, I'm learning, you know, the back end of the business, and in the future, you know, I would like to help, you know, new female fighters or fighters for that much, you know, manage themselves or help them out with different things. So it's, I mean, I like it. It's just a hard job, and it's not easy. So, but you know, it can be done, and I've done it. You know, I've done it for 5.5 years, and I don't know how I've branded my name, but it's out there, and you know, every day I do it, I learn something new.
Cool. And you're also your own nutritionist. What's that like?
It's you know, like I said, I've learned myself. You know, I pick up things that are healthy for me and make my body feel good, you know, from other people, from other nutritionists. And I apply it to my everyday life, and it helps me out that way. And, you know, if somebody trains with me or, they ask about my diet, I simply tell them, you know, this is what makes me feel good for the reasons that it does. So, you know, I've kind of taught myself and, you know, learned from other people, learned from the professionals on how I should eat and what makes me feel good. So.
Cool. Well, since you have that expertise, can you give us a few examples of some of the better foods to eat and stuff that helps out with weight cutting and that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been a vegan now for about 6 months. So I don't eat any dairy. I don't eat any meat. And I've never felt better in my life. Right now, I'm the leaner. I've never been as lean as I am right now. You know, and for some people it's different. Some people say, you know, I cannot, you know, picture myself not eating meat. But for me, it's been really good. You know, I've always had problems with my stomach, and now I don't have any more problems. I feel, you know, strong. I have a lot of energy. I eat a lot of, my proteins are from my beans and tofu and soy and stuff like that. So, you know, that's my diet, and that's what makes me feel good. So, and it, I mean, I've never been as lean as I am now. So I don't know if that would help any. I mean, I'm you know, that's my diet right now. I'm a vegan, so there's no dairy, there's no meat. All I eat, you know, a lot of salads, a lot of soy products. And also, I mean, I have a vegan protein shakes. I have my vegan protein shakes and stuff like that, my supplements that I take to replace meals and things like that. So that's kind of my eating, you know, my diet now.
Cool. Well, it sounds like Big Country Roy Nelson should give you a call. He's been making a lot of waves lately for the weight, so... A big bone of contention that they want him to cut down, get on a diet, and work with a nutritionist.
Well, if they're going to put anybody on a diet, as much as we love him, Rich, another former guest of ours, man they call Butterbean.
Oh, yeah.
300 pounds, he was doing pretty well when he was up to 440, you know, not doing so
well. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I think he used to train. I think he was part of ATT.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I thought he was from...
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was from American Top Team. I remember when I first started, I saw this big guy on this treadmill, and that was Butterbee, right? That's his name?
Is there Eric
Ash? Yeah. I remember first hearing about him. They used to do things on pay-per-view before UFC really started booming. This was back in the early 90s. They would do what they were calling these tough man contests, where these basically guys that had no boxing experience would put on gloves, and I think they eventually made him wear headgear, but at the time it was just gloves, protective cup, and mouthpiece, and they'd fight like 3 one-minute rounds. And these guys, most of the time, were not in shape to box. And then they were talking about this guy Eric Asher's story, that you had to be under 400 pounds to you know, compete, and he was at like 430 or something, or 425. So he went on a strict diet, like fish, whatever, whatever, and butter beans. So he got the nickname Butterbean. And he dropped like 100 and some pounds, and he got down to like 300, like 300, 310. And I saw him fight in Atlantic City in 1999. He'd already finished with the Tough Man, and he was fighting, you know, some boxing matches. And the guys he were fighting, obviously not highly regarded guys, but they were entertaining, and Butterbean would come, and he'd throw a lot of punches, and he was trying to challenge Mike Tyson at the time. And it was like, I had a picture.
Oh, no.
I have a picture.
How long ago was this?
Yeah, but he's looking the other way, because just as the photo's being snapped, somebody's like, you'd never be able to fight Mike Tyson, and he's just about to say, I'd fight him in a four-rounder. And I'm sitting there, the photo gets snapped, and he's looking the other way.
Yeah,
and we didn't have digital back then, so we didn't know until I developed it.
He was actually known as the King of the Four-Rounders.
King of the Four-Rounders. But, yeah, at the time he was doing well when he was 310, 315. I saw him about 6 years later in Philadelphia, and he was up to 375, and he could barely move. And his weight just kept going up and kept going up. And it's like, you know, it's to the point where not only are you not healthy, but, you know, your performances, are, you can tell. I mean, he can barely move out there. He can, you know, barely throw punches anymore. I like the guy. He's a hell of a nice guy. He's got a great sense of humor. But if he's going to continue in a combat type of sport environment, he's got to get back down to the threes, and preferably the low threes.
Oh, yeah. You said he's in the, what, mid-fours?
I think his last one was like 425, 430.
Oh, man, yes. Wow.
Yeah, I think it's last. And last match was against the world's strongest man, Puchinowski. He got beat to a pulp.
Oh, my gosh.
And you figure he's only about 5'9".
Yeah, I mean, he's already also, I mean, how old is he? I'm not even sure how old he is.
He's got to be around 40 or, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to his Wikipedia page.
But it's kind of funny because I interviewed him a couple times, and then we actually had him on the show live.
He's going to be 45 in August.
He actually is pretty pissed off at, you know, with all the boxing and MMA he's done over the years, the thing that he's most recognized for is his cameo in one of the Jackass movies. But getting back to you, Jessica, what would you say is the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
the most important thing I do getting ready for the fight, I think, is the actual camp. I mean, the training is the hard part. You know, the fight is the easy part. So I think the first 4 weeks of training of training camp are the hardest, weeks. The conditioning and all of that you have to, push. You have to push yourself more than usual. So I think for me, the hardest part is the training. For the fight.
And do you have a particular strength or a favorite submission or strike that you consider your?
Well, my specialty. I'm known for the ground. I'm a jiu-jitsu, but I'm training everything now. So I want to be well-rounded. I've been training a lot of stand-up and wrestling and things like that. So that's my strength. The ground is my best weapon.
All right. And when you're on the ground, do you go for a particular submission a lot?
No, I mean, wherever you fall. But I do like the katagatame, which is the arm triangle. I love triangles. I love rear naked chokes. So, a little bit of everything. A little bit of everything. But I have to say that my favorite would be the katagatame, which is the arm triangle.
That's interesting. I never heard of that. I've heard of the arm triangle, but I never heard it called that. Something you learn every day, I guess.
Yeah. And like I said, I train with all of my Brazilian trainers. So that's the way they, that's the name there, katagatame.
Right. I think I'd be good at that if I ever did MMA. I did a lot of wrestling and boxing, but when I get into a street fight, I would always go for the headlock. and I get more like a guillotine these days in MMA. But
Right.
I won one of my best fights in middle school with a nice headlock, and then I threw the kid to the ground by the head. But I was still holding on to it.
That's wrestling moves, right?
Yeah. So, I always thought that I'd probably be pretty good at it if I tried it, but I just got interested in it too late. I only started even really watching it in 2006. But since then, it's grown quite a bit, and there's actually a lot of good talent out there for the females and the males, but it seems like it's a little bit tougher to get good matchups for the females. What's been your experience with that, trying to get matchups in regular fights?
It's going to be my fight in 7 months. So it's been really hard these last 7 months, finding fights and just trying to survive. I had like 4 fights fall through for one reason. And for my last one, I was as I stated in the article, I was in Japan for the last one, and I was supposed to fight the day of, the day that the earthquake hit. So, like I said, for one reason or another, they haven't gone through. But it happens. It's been a hard 7 months though, trying to look for fights and trying to just find some work. So, I keep looking, but it is hard to find fights.
All right, and what's been your toughest fight so far? Who's been the opponent that's given you the most trouble?
I think my toughest fight would have to been Karina Gum. That was in, I think, 03? No, 03. Oh, my God. That was in 07, I'm sorry. That was 3 years ago. 4 years ago.
Yeah, and what made that so tough?
Just because she had a lot more experience, she was a lot heavier than I was, and I was barely learning. I was a little over a year into the sport, and it was kind of like, it was, I had to prove that, I had to kind of jump into that fight, So I tested myself, and you know, it was my toughest fight.
And you mentioned being in Japan during the earthquake there. What was that whole experience like? Did that change your perspective at all? And
absolutely. You know, I thank God every day for giving me, you know, the opportunity to be here today. And I, you know, it was obviously an opportunity or not an experience that I will never forget. You know, it was just to see those people there and not to be able to, you know, not being able to do anything to help. It was, and also just, you know, being, you know, we had the last flight to leave Japan. You're just so grateful to be, you know, well, for me, I'm just grateful to be here and be able to talk to people about my experience here I feel sorry for all those people there, and my heart, you know, goes out to all of them. But you know, I'm just lucky to be here. I could say that much. If I was, I tell my friend, you know, we were ready to go to the actual venue. If we were there an hour before the venue where the event was supposed to happen collapsed. So, you know, I'm just grateful and happy that you know, that I'm here today, and that, you know, there's everything happens for a reason. And I think I'm you know, I got another opportunity to do something and to help out in some way. So it was a great experience. Sad, but it was a good experience.
Japanese MMA has taken a real big hit since then, too. It seems that, you know, that really caused a lot of problems when it was already a kind of a hurting industry over there that put a lot of people on the map and helped kind of, at one point when Pride was still going, it helped keep the UFC on their toes.
Oh, yeah, now it's really slowed down there. But, you know, they've had that sport. You know, all their lives. So I think that sport will never die there. It's you know, it has slowed down. It's just, I think it's just a matter of time. Everything is slowed down, you know, the economy and everything else. So it's, I think it's just a matter of time. And I think that it'll be back in Japan.
You do some unique things, it sounds like, here from your email that you sent. As far as your training, you work a lot on balance, equilibrium, and spatial orientation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it just helps my eye coordination, my foot movement, my balance, and things like that, so I could be ready in a fight. You know, I can be ready for anything, any. My eye coordination, my feet movement, my balance, I mean, it's very important when you apply it to the sport. At first, it's like, you know, why would we need something like that? But when you do the exercises and then you apply it to the training, you see, oh, my God.
Kind of like Karate Kid, pink defense, wax the car. Are you doing the crane kicks on the beach? And as far as you know, looking back at your career, what would you say has been your best moment so far? Oh, did we lose her?
Hello? I'm still here.
Okay. You might have lost her. Jessica, are you there?
Hello.
Yeah, we lost her. I thought she took offense to my... So we lost her.
Hello?
Yeah,
sorry about that. The call fell. I was telling you about my training. I just started that this year, and I feel, you know, my speed improved a lot, my eye coordination, and things like that. So it's really helped me. It's really, really, really helped me. And it's fun at the same time, so it's pretty cool.
I think you missed my Karate Kid reference. I asked if it was like paint the fence and wax the car.
You know what? It actually, it really is something like that. You know, it's funny, but it really is something like that. You see everything, you know, with the exercises that you have to do. Everything that, when you apply it to training, everything is like slow motion to you. So it is, you know, it's similar, and I really enjoy it.
Right. Cool. Well, what would you say has been the most or the best moment in your career so far?
The best moments of my career, I would have to say, the best moment in my career was getting signed for Bulldog. That was my first big opportunity. I think the second big moment in my career would have to be when I won my gold medal for the U.S. team. When I won my first USA Filo grappling gold medal against Tara LaRosa. So that was a highlight in my career. And the third would have to be, getting into this last year's 115-pound female tournament with Bellator. With all these women from all around the world, just top contenders like Megumi, Rosie Sexton, you know, amongst the others. It was an honor to be a part of it. So those have to be some of the highlights in my career.
Cool. And what do you love most about mixed martial arts?
You're always learning something new, you know. There's always, every day you learn something new. You never know it all, you know. You can never know it all. So every day that you train, you learn something new. You learn that your body can move a certain way and a new move, something. So mixed martial art there's always something to learn. You're never going to be good enough. So, you're always improving, and that's what I like about it. It's challenging, you know. It's not easy. At the same time, you're staying fit, so.
Yeah, it's always a good one.
Yeah.
Tony, I'm sure you got a question somewhere inside you.
I've been asking
questions. Come on, guys.
This is what happens. Rich always starts with me.
I'm sorry?
Rich always starts with me.
I'm sure you can take him.
Well, you know what? I mean, Rich is a lucky guy, Jessica. He's a very lucky guy. He's a lucky guy that he had to fight Michael Jordan back in the day.
Really?
You didn't know that. Rich fought Michael Jordan.
He fought Michael Jordan. How did he fight Michael Jordan?
It was Michael Jordan from West Point, who was...
West Point Military Academy. There was a actually, it's funny. I actually was the first guy that Jordan fought when he fought off campus for the first time. He was always fighting at Army. You never saw him off campus. Then he came and fought me. And then he ended up fighting Rich in the Nationals. Rich and I were two fights away from fighting each other for the national title.
Really?
Yeah. Same weight class. I actually drew the future three-time champion in the first round, who had a foot in height over me. Well, actually, 11 inches. I'm exaggerating. He had 11 inches over me, and he ended up winning three times. But I still say, if I would have had more scouting on him, I'd never seen him until we got in the ring, and I said, oh, my God, that guy's almost a foot taller than me. I think if I would have came in better prepared, better focused, and I could have beaten him.
Right.
But if I would have got by him and Rich would have got by Jordan, we would have fought for the national title. So, yeah, Rich talks trash because he's all the way in Vegas right now.
Rich, what do you think about that?
Well, I still think someday we're going to have to make it happen.
Uh-oh.
It's going to have to happen. You know, we'll be in, you know, walkers and everything, but...
One of these days. We'll at least have to spar. I mean,
yeah,
at least that.
It'll be fun.
I've been taking it too easy out here. I gotta get out here in the 100-degree weather out here in Vegas and start...
Oh, man.
This is my Homer Simpson.
I'll I'll actually be in Vegas on from the 30th of this month till the 3rd. I'll be doing the G2 summit. There's going to be a summit. It's a all female like summit. There'll be like amateur fights. I'll be doing a seminar there on Sunday. So I mean, I don't know if you guys, Rich, if you're close, and if we can, you know, get together, that would be
great. Well, you definitely have my email already, so shoot me a reminder and tell me the details, and I'll be happy to come by and get you on YouTube instead of just on
right.
We got a good YouTube following, and I think our top video is 150,000 views, even though it was a few years ago. So
we've
got some time to mount up, but we're always looking for new stuff to put on YouTube. And like I said, it's you know, the female fighting is a big,
love YouTube,
big deal to me personally. Just
thank you so much. Thank you so much for supporting all the females in the sport and for, you know, for the interest in giving me this interview.
Not at all. It's definitely something that needs the spotlight, you know. And it's actually, to me, a situation now, I think, because boxing, when they first started, you know, there was a big deal about Christy Martin. She had a fight on HBO. But since then, the actually get more attention overseas in boxing is when you see more of the headlights. As we go, but in MMA, it seems like women have moved up the ladder fast. I don't know if you've seen that, but it seems like they're not quite solidified in the UFC yet. They're definitely making the move, and it's only a matter of time. I think that the more women that get involved, the better it'll be. But the women that are involved are well known; they take it seriously themselves well. So it's a good thing.
It is. You know, and this is a fastest right now going forward. So I think it's only going to continue growing. Like I said, we just have to stay, you know, stay busy and you know, interviewing and educating people about the sport.
For sure. Well, I'm glad we had you on here to our fans, and just want to give an opportunity to give a shout out to anybody out there. Thank anybody that you want, and mention service and where people can find you and all that sort of stuff. Here we go.
If you want to follow me, you can Twitter at JagAKT. And you can also go on to my website, www.jagaaguilar.com. And I, you know, like to thank all my fans and always supporting me and believing in me, and all my sponsors for helping me, you know, throughout my career, my team, my training partners. And for this fight, just shout out for a few sponsors of mine.
Oh, we got the 90s.
Hello?
Yeah, we're still going.
Okay. I just got Wonka Tanning Club, Latix, TRA, ARG Power, my gym, American Top Team, South Miami Sports Performance, Palm Beach Boxing, the OTM shop from Pompano. Like I don't want to miss any of my sponsors. So I want everyone who's helped me, you know, through my career, supported me, and you know, again, thank having me. And I just want to tell all the fans, any female that wants to become an MMA fighter or wants to train mixed martial arts, join a gym. Get educated, and you can do whatever you want to. So, guys, and I hope you guys have a good evening.
All right, have a good night, and in Vegas.
Yes. Also, thank you. So, stay tuned for my fight, June 25th. It's going to be, hopefully it's going to be airing on MTV too. And, you know, stay tuned.
All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Tornado, and I am out.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Likewise. Thank you, guys.